greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's kick off with the Road to Russia 2018. And the qualifying competition for football's premier event. Football fans all over the world are looking forward to another series of qualifying matches for the International Soccer Jamboree. In Africa, there are two World Cup qualifiers scheduled for Thursday. In Conakry, Guinea is at home against Libya, and in Kampala, Uganda is at home against Egypt. In African World Cup qualifying Group A, Guinea and Libya are at the bottom of the table with no points from two matches. Tunisia and the Democratic Republic of Congo, who will play each other Friday near Tunisia's capital, Tunis, top the table with the maximum 6 points from two qualifiers. In African World Cup qualifying Group E, the Cranes of Uganda can move to the top if they can beat the visiting Pharaohs of Egypt on Thursday in Kampala. Egypt currently has the maximum 6 points, and Uganda has 4 points. The Ugandans have never qualified for the World Cup, while the Egyptians, winners of a record 7 African titles, last qualified at the 1990 World Cup in Italy. Our Voice of America football fans will remember the top team in each of Africa's 5 qualifying groups will book a ticket to next year's World Cup in Russia. Meanwhile, the U.S. men's national soccer team will host Costa Rica on Friday evening in another World Cup qualifier near New York City. The game will be played at the 25,000-seat Red Bull Arena, the home of Major League Soccer's New York Red Bulls Club. Taking a look at this World Cup qualifying group for the North America, Central America, and Caribbean region, Mexico leads with 14 points from 6 qualifiers. Costa Rica is in second place with 11 points, and the USA is in third place with 8 points. The top 3 teams in this CONCACAF qualifying group will go to Russia next year, and the 4th place team will advance to a 2-leg playoff in November against an Asian opponent. The USA's head coach, Bruce Arena, looks ahead to Friday night's match.
As you know, it's a very important game for our team. We've worked real hard to position ourselves to be in a position to qualify for the 2018 World Cup. And in order to do that, we have to have a successful set of games here in September. So naturally, the game on Friday against Costa Rica is going to be very important if we hope to be in Russia in 2018.
Coach Bruce Arena says the USA's hopes to be in Russia in 2018 have been bolstered by his players up front.
I like our strikers here. The combination of Altidore and Wood, Dempsey and Morris and Wondolowski, it gives us a lot of options. They're very good players, and I think the one thing that gives me so much optimism is the fact that they're all in very good form right now. And then whoever we choose over these next couple of games are going to be dangerous. So I'm real comfortable with the group of strikers we have here.
Coach Arena talks about the next couple of games. After the game against Costa Rica Friday night, the USA team will travel to Honduras for another World Cup qualifying match on September 5th. The captain of the U.S. men's national soccer team is midfielder Michael Bradley of Major League Soccer's Toronto FC club.
We've gotten this far. We've turned it around in the right ways, and we've got to make sure we finish the job. Like, all the work that we've put in this year was for these next four games, to make sure that we can find the right ways in the biggest moments when the lights come on brightest to make sure that we get the job done.
Midfielder Michael Bradley, the captain of the U.S. men's national soccer team. Now, a player who's rapidly becoming the bright young face of U.S. soccer is 18-year-old Borussia Dortmund boy Christian Pulisic. Last year, Pulisic became the youngest foreign player to score a goal in Germany's Bundesliga, as well as the youngest American player to score a goal in World Cup qualifying. Overall, Christian Pulisic has scored 7 goals in 16 international appearances for the United States. At a news conference before the Costa Rica World Cup qualifier, Pulisic was asked, "What's the biggest quality you bring to the U.S. team?"
I mean, I think that my biggest quality is just going out there and being creative, being dangerous, just always keeping the defender on their toes with that attacking style. Yeah, that's what I go out and try to do, just kind of be unpredictable and going out there and doing whatever I can, helping my team, you know.
That's Borussia Dortmund boy Christian Pulisic, who will be trying to help the United States win Friday night when the Americans host Costa Rica in a World Cup qualifying match near New York City. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Keep on sunny side, always on sunny side. Keep on sunny side of life. It'll help us every day. It'll brighten all our ways when we keep on sunny side of life. When we keep on sunny side of life.
G'day, mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right. Give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the Sunny Side of Sports, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoje here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Voice of America!
I'm very happy how I'm feeling right now, how I felt coming off the court, and I think there's a lot of positives for me to look at, you know, that I can come through a five-setter with the preparation that I had, and, you know, I was definitely also lucky to play tonight because the rain, others could all push over to tomorrow. So that would have been tougher for me maybe to back it up back-to-back days. But even that, I mean, look, if I enter the tournaments because I believe I can play and go deep. So, and I still believe that, and I think this is actually going to give me a lot of confidence.
That Swiss tennis star Roger Federer speaking after his hard-fought five-set victory over young American Francis Tiafoe in the first round of the U.S. Open in New York. The final score from Arthur Ashe Stadium, 4-6, 6-2, 6-1, 1-6, and 6-4. The 19-year-old Tiafoe grew up here in the Washington area, and his parents are from Sierra Leone. Francis was hoping to pull off the biggest victory of his young career, but Roger Federer prevailed. We heard Roger talk about the rain in New York. Well, because of that rain, the match was played under a closed roof at Arthur Ashe Stadium, and that amplified the volume of the rowdy crowd. Many of the fans cheered for Tiafoe to score the upset. At 36 years of age, Roger Federer has had a resurgent 2017, winning Wimbledon and the Australian Open. And Roger is hoping to extend his record Grand Slam tally to 20 titles. Count them, 20 major titles with another trophy in New York. At the post-match news conference, Roger said concerns about his back hurt his U.S. Open preparations.
I just think I didn't have the preparation I was hoping to get, you know, since Montreal focus has been more on the back and sort of just making sure I can play the tournament rather than being well prepared. I always knew I was going to come in feeling rusty or not great, but I was hoping to start better. I really struggled early on, and I think Francis connected well, and I just really kind of lost my footing sometimes. My eye wasn't working. I was misjudging distance. I think I was also being a bit cautious with my movement. And then in the second set, I think it all started to come together, and that was good.
That Swiss tennis star Roger Federer speaking after his five-set first-round victory over Francis Tiafoe of the USA at the U.S. Open in New York. I encourage our Voice of America listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. If you go to the page today, Wednesday, you'll see a nice photo by USA Today sports photographer Jeff Burke, who shows Roger Federer hugging Francis Tiafoe after their match in New York. In a big first-round upset on the women's side at the U.S. Open, Japanese teenager Naomi Osaka knocked out defending champion Angelique Kerber of Germany in straight sets, 6-3 and 6-1. The 19-year-old Osaka was named the Women's Tennis Association's Newcomer of the Year in 2016. She was rarely troubled by Kerber, who has not won a title since she lifted the trophy at last year's U.S. Open. And for our VOA tennis fans keeping score, the last defending women's champion to lose in the first round at the U.S. Open was the Russian Svetlana Kuznetsova in 2005. In another women's result, top-seeded Karolina Pliskova of the Czech Republic advanced easily to the second round with a 6-2, 6-1 victory over Poland's Magda Linette. Well, the Voice of America's director, Amanda Bennett, honored three of my VOA colleagues, Abdulaziz Osman, Nicholas Pinot, and Salem Solomon, with the Cowan Award for Humanitarian Reporting on Tuesday at our VOA headquarters right here in Washington. Abdulaziz, Nicholas, and Salem were recognized for their wide-ranging multimedia project, Hunger Across Africa. VOA Director Bennett described it as an amazing team effort that included more than 80 original reports, dozens of videos, radio broadcasts, and panel discussions produced on numerous platforms in 15 languages within VOA's Africa division. The Cowan Humanitarian Awards were handed out during the Voice of America's 75th anniversary year of broadcasting, and Director Bennett has this special message for our many VOA listeners.
"75 years ago, Voice of America made its first broadcast. Today, We broadcast in over 45 languages all over the world. We broadcast in every means that people could possibly want to receive their news and information. We use radio still. We use television. We broadcast for the web, for mobile, and if new forms of communication are invented, we'll be there too. Our mission is really, really simple. We give neutral, fair, objective, independent news and information to people who have no other access to it. And we tell America's story. And America's story is rich and full. It goes from the entrepreneurial climate of Silicon Valley to our great universities, to health and medicine and medical advances. It's also the story of America's diaspora, the people who came here from all over the world. I started my journalistic career more than 50 years ago. And here today at Voice of America, I remember just why I became a journalist. It's such a privilege to be working here with the great men and women who are telling America's story and providing neutral news and information around the world. I'm so happy to be here at Voice of America as it celebrates its 75th anniversary, and I feel proud to welcome it into the next 75 years.
That's Amanda Bennett, the director of the Voice of America. Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending on this Wednesday?
You've been talking about it throughout the show, but what a match last night. Roger Federer and Francis Tiafoe, big foe. As he's known, his nickname is Big Foe.
He was a big foe for Federer.
Big foe for Roger Federer. And he played with the Washington Castles of World Team Tennis earlier this year, and that was his nickname, Big Foe. But Big Foe for Roger Federer, indeed pushing him to the brink. Francis Tiafoe, even though he didn't win that match, he earned a lot of respect and a lot of new fans on social media. And keep in mind, Sonny, this is the narrative that people are talking about on social media. He's already beaten Alexander Zverev, who many people are saying could win multiple Grand Slams in the future. He's taken Federer to a five-set match in a Grand Slam tournament. So a lot of people saying that Francis Tiafoe is the perhaps bright future for Americans men's tennis that has been lacking for so long. We've talked about, really, it's been over a decade since an American man has won a Grand Slam. I think it was Andy Roddick was the last one to do so. It has been a lack of American male talent in tennis. And the hope is that Francis Tiafoe might break that drought. Certainly he's well on his way. And he's only 19 years old, which is the amazing thing. Equally amazing, as someone pointed out, Roger Federer has one Grand Slam win for every year of Francis Tiafoe's life. Of course, Roger Federer, a 19-time Grand Slam winner.
Andrew, I was talking with our producer, Bill Werkinger, before the show how because of the rain in New York, they closed the roof for that Tiafoe-Federer match, and that amplified the rowdy crowd at the Arthur Ashe Stadium, and that crowd seemed to be supporting Big Foe, as you say.
Yeah, it's always good to see when an American does well, and it's always good to see a competitive match under the lights there at Arthur Ashe Stadium, the largest tennis stadium in the world, over 20,000 seats in that stadium. I've been there before. It is absolutely massive, and that was before the roof was put on. Now that the roof is on, I can only imagine. It must be even more cavernous and echoing, but certainly that contributes to the play there. And even the match before that, Madison Keys, the American taking up a straight set win in the early night match. That was a very exciting match as well. But not just on the men's side, Sonny. The women's side, quite a lot of excitement. At the start of this tournament, there were eight women who could end the tournament as number one. Something that's absolutely amazing. The point total is so close with these top eight women that any of them could be the number one player in the world after this tournament. Now, so far, Joanna Konta of the United Kingdom lost in the first round, so she is out of that running. But even Simona Halep, who lost in the first round to Maria Sharapova, it's a stretch. All the other players would have to lose in the first or second round, but Simona Halep could end this tournament as the number one ranked player in the world. So that is another exciting element to this, not just the play on the court, but trying to determine the points totals and see who could come out on top potentially at the end of these 2 weeks in New York.
Andrew, you mentioned the age of Big Foe, 19 years old. Well, another 19-year-old from Japan, Naomi Osaka, pulls off a big upset on the women's side at the U.S. Open.
Yeah, defending champion Angelique Kerber, the former world number one just a year ago, defeated by Naomi Osaka, quite an impressive victory. And one of the big upsets that we've seen, you know, of course, Simona Halep getting upset by Maria Sharapova. That was the big match. Federer going to the edge of a five-set match. But this was quite a surprising one that the defending champion on the women's side is knocked out. So on the first day of the tournament, Sonny, we have the defending men's champion out, who is Stan Wawrinka. Of course, he didn't play this year. And the defending women's champion, Angelique Kerber, knocked out. So it's no repeats this year. It's going to be somebody, maybe who's somebody who's won it before, like Federer or Nadal, perhaps. Or it could be somebody completely new. It's the excitement of the tournament.
Andrew, at the post-match news conference, Roger Federer hinted that maybe he's not quite 100%, that maybe he has some lingering back issues. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's, you know, certainly going to five sets in a first-round match doesn't bode well for him. I saw a stat on social media that only two men have ever gone to five sets in the first round and gone on to win the U.S. Open. So the odds are stacked against him. But I'm hoping he can get well, and I think a lot of fans are hoping he can get well as well, because this has been such a banner year for Roger Federer, and what a way to wrap up this Grand Slam season by winning the U.S. Open. It'd be pretty amazing.
Pretty amazing indeed, Andrew. What else is trending out there?
Well, we talked yesterday about the situation in Houston, Texas, and the flooding there after Hurricane Harvey went through, devastating the city. And we talked about how the Houston Astros of Major League Baseball and the Houston Texans of the National Football League have donated money to the relief efforts. Well, today we have word that Leslie Alexander, who is the owner of the National Basketball Association's Houston Rockets, is donating $10 million to the relief efforts. So quite a lot of money. Fans amazed at this level of generosity. Not just donating the money too. The Houston Rockets and the Houston Texans are opening both of their arenas to people displaced by the storm. So they're going to have ways for people to camp out there, and people who can't return to their homes or their homes have been flooded, they can set up there in the stadium. So literally opening their doors to them. But a lot of criticism for the biggest beard in basketball, James Harden. He just signed a multi-million dollar contract with Houston. In fact, a $228 million contract. In addition to that, James Harden has a $200 million contract with Adidas in a sponsorship deal. So a lot of fans asking on social media, where's the money? Why hasn't he donated anything yet? As arguably the biggest player of the Houston Rockets, of course, Houston has a big part in his life. Why hasn't he donated anything? So we're going to monitor that and see if he does make a donation, if maybe the social media pressure urges him to make a donation. Many people noting, though, maybe he's already made a donation. We just haven't heard about it, and he hasn't chosen to publicize that. But as that develops, Sonny, we will keep an eye on that, and we'll bring that to the latest to you and our listeners.
And one quick note for you and our listeners, Andrew. Leslie Alexander, you mentioned him. The Houston Rockets owner, he's planning, at least he has announced that he's planning to sell the club because Dikembe Mutombo has expressed interest in buying the team. But for now, Leslie Alexander is still the owner of the Houston Rockets.
Yeah, and he's making that ownership known with this big donation. We've talked about on the show other people, even Beyonce, the singer, going and trying to buy a stake in the Houston Rockets. She also made, I believe, a $7 million donation. In addition to countless Major League Baseball players, both in Houston and outside of Houston, National Football League players, National Basketball Association players. So across the leagues, not just in Houston, but for a lot of these players who maybe grew up in Houston or went to school in Houston or previously played for a team in Houston, they're making their voices heard with their wallets and donating that money to try to help the city that they love so much.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the August 30th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Thomas Blondet. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In late 2014, ISIS was at the height of its power. They controlled what was effectively a quasi-state, said Brett McGurk, special presidential envoy for the Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS, at a press conference. They were able to mass and maneuver force all around Iraq and Syria, taking entire cities, controlling millions of people under their domain. In June 2014, ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi announced the formation of a caliphate in Iraq and Syria and declared himself the caliph. One of the reasons for ISIS' success was its broad and global appeal to foreign sympathizers. It preys on the minds of vulnerable and disaffected people around the world. It is a force of modern-day barbarism that seeks nothing less than the complete subjugation or destruction of all civilized people. It seeks to roll back centuries of progress on the rights and liberties of all human beings. Beginning in 2014, to date, about 40,000 foreign terrorist fighters from about 120 countries from around the world traveled into Syria and Iraq to join ISIS. To destroy the terrorist group, one of the areas the Global Coalition to Defeat ISIS had to focus on was to stop the influx of foreign terrorist fighters into Syria and seal the borders. They were coming by the thousands, and it's down at least by 90%, and we are not finding ISIS fighters being able to leave Syria, said Special Envoy McGurk. This decline, due in part to significant battlefield losses and an increasing number of desertions from ISIS ranks as fighters become disillusioned or return home, is making it harder for ISIS to replenish its ranks, and the number of ISIS fighters in Iraq and Syria has been reduced to the lowest levels in more than 2.5 years.
Not too long ago, what they would do is plan a terrorist attack in Raqqa. They would train a unit, kind of a terrorist combat unit. They would then infiltrate out. They would hang out in Monbij. They would then infiltrate out and go conduct an attack, such as in Paris or in the Brussels airport.
The caliphate is what drew so many of these foreign fighters to join ISIS and what makes it a global network, said Special Envoy McGurk. We think there are about 2,000 ISIS fighters left in Raqqa, and they will most likely die in Raqqa as forces continue to liberate the city.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.